Tonight's homily, sermon, Dharma talk, whatever you like, is entitled Seeing Quarantine as a Spiritual Retreat. Subtitle, How to Create a Personal Daily Devotional Practice. And I would add to that why that's so important. For most of us, we go through our days a combination of two things. One might say is instinct, the other is habit. Instinct would be the part that, you know, comes about when we, right before we get up in the morning, where our system, knowing that our sleep cycle is coming to an end, will secrete more cortisol into our bloodstream. And our blood sugar levels will rise. And again, all of this happening automatically through the wonders of our system. And then we wake up, and then habit takes over. Now, instinct might still be there when we go to the bathroom first thing. But then habit takes over. And that habit might be brushing our teeth, taking a shower, even eating breakfast, looking at our emails, checking out Facebook, whatever else we would do. And those habits make up what we would call our day. And then, you know, at the end of the day, whenever that is for us, we get sleepy, and then we decide that our instincts kick in again, our brain waves start to change, and we go to sleep. And then the autonomic system kicks over. The trouble with it is that if we are not experiencing a life that is very fulfilled, very free of suffering, filled with joy and happiness, if we're not living a life where we can honestly look at ourselves and say, what's the level of my happiness? What's the level of my sense of satisfaction? If we can say that that level or that sense is less than a 5, then we need to change something. Now, that doesn't mean we're always going to feel happy or that we're never going to have discursive emotions. Of course not. We're human beings. However, if that becomes the experience that we're having most, then something's wrong. Ordinarily, in a situation where something happens that's terrible, let's say, it would be odd or strange for us not to feel sad, not sometimes to feel angry. But if that is the state of mind that we're experiencing day after day after day, and that's the way we react in situation after situation, well, I leave it to you. It was never enough for me. I, like everyone else, have been conditioned in a certain fashion. And I decided at some point in my life that I was fed up with it, that I had had enough, that I no longer wanted to live that way, and that life would not be worth living if this is the way within which I had to go about it. And so fortunately for me, I was exposed at a very young age to these spiritual practices. Excuse me, I was also fortunate to have some guides in my life at a very young age. But it wasn't really even through my teen years that, as I was learning all of this, that I really began to embrace that. It was honestly when I reached my late teens into around 1920 that I decided that I had enough. And a lot of that motivation was not for me even as much as it was for the fact that I had met my beautiful wife. And I did not want to have her experience that type of emotional roller coaster with me. And so I made up my mind. And what I do on a regular basis is I recommit to those vows. And I think that's an important practice. So what did I do that made it different? I developed a daily devotional practice. A daily devotional practice which I do every day without ceasing. Now, have I ever forgotten to do it? Have I ever been in a hurry and didn't do it? Sure, that's happened to me. And as I always say, I might not notice when I'm not practicing for a day, but believe me, everybody else will. So why do we want to develop a daily devotional practice? Because our practice is such that the insights that we gain, if they are not nurtured on a daily basis, if they're not fed, then that new insight, that new understanding, new learning won't grow. As I always say, we can't really unlearn something. And the brain doesn't work like that. You know, when we learn something, there's dendrite pathways that are created in our brain. And as long as we keep having the same beliefs and thoughts, those pathways are fed and stay strong. If I learn something new, I can't unlearn that other one or expect that other one to just suddenly go away. It doesn't work that way in any natural system in this universe. So what I have to do is I have to create a new dendritic pathway, and I have to nurture that every day and keep that strong. And if I only feed that pathway, the other one will atrophy. And then, yes, I will come to a place where this one is no longer functioning in my life. But I must do a daily practice in order for that to happen. It is impossible. And I don't care what kind of emotionally high experience you might have of oneness. If you don't nurture that, it won't last. And you'll walk around thinking you're enlightened and everyone else will think you're an ass. We must practice every day. So how do we construct or create a practice? Well, as you know, I like to come at things from the cosmic perspective. I like to look and understand nature and use nature as my holy writ. I like to understand how things work so that when I bring them in harmony with why things matter, they are one. So the way I come around doing a practice is like this. And before I do say that, I wanted to also, why do I use the words that I use? Like some people have asked me that. They say, Sensei, why devotional? Well, it's for the very same reason that I'm not opposed to call this type of service a worship service. Now, generally, in a theistic sort of tradition, worship and devotion is to some other being. In a non-theistic tradition such as our own, what we are devoted to, what we find worthy, and that's what the word worship's etymology comes from, worthyship. It's worthy of us giving devotion. And what does devotion mean? It means giving time. Giving time and energy to something that we feel is very important. So for that reason, I call it a daily devotion. So what do we want to do in a daily devotion? Well, let's look at the human body and brain. We know that the brain has, some people say, 3 regions, others 4. So it's either a triune brain or quadrant brain. And that each of those sections or regions is a kind of a little mind of its own. It's kind of a little thing working on its own. And so in our practice of a daily devotional, we want to respond to each of those parts of the brain body. And remember, the mind and body are one. So our practice should also involve the body, because as much as we can involve our sensorial experiences, touch, taste, sound, smell, the more deeply we will bring these practices in and feed and nurture those insights. So let's begin with the first part of the brain. And this part of the brain is called the reptilian or lizard brain. Now that part of us is very, very ancient. And it really only has three functions. It's there to help us fight, it's there to help us flee, some cases freeze, or others to continue to spread the species. So its design is very instinctive and very primitive. And it has no moral value, it has no ethic, it just is our basic survival instinct. The reptilian brain. It's at the very base of the brain. And from that flows out the nervous system. So we have to address that part of the brain. The second part of the brain, the midbrain, or some people call it the mammalian brain, and some people separate the mammalian brain into two parts, the lower and higher mammalian. We're just going to use the mammalian brain tonight. And that part is the part of us that is so much about connection. That connection physically, such as when we're touched or held, and connections mentally, such in the sense of status that we have. And then the highest part, the neocortex, the newest part of in our evolutionary history. Well, that's the part of us that can deliberate, can think, can plan. It's kind of the higher purpose part of the brain. So in a good daily devotional, we want to do all three. We need to meet the needs of all three. So the first thing that we can do for the lizard brain, for the reptilian brain, is the actions that we take before the centering space, and the movements we do. Now again, depending on how we're able, these movements will change. But we want to involve the body in whatever capacity we can, even if we can only lift up our head slightly, even if we can only move our eyes. We want to engage the body in what we're doing. And we want to do it in such a way that those actions send a message to the reptilian brain that everything is okay. When we open the space of the altar, we begin by, you see, I take a piece of pine branch, a sprig of it, and I asperge, and I make the four directions. We do that as a sense that this is a safe space that I'm creating. So in your own practices, you can do something of that nature that says, when I enter into this holy space, and it is a holy space. And what does that mean? It is a space where I experience oneness intentionally. Excuse me. And so the movements I take, opening the space, preparing the space, having the centered space, all that's very important. And then what do? I offer incense. Our sense of smell is back here in the lower back part of the brain. It's one of the most ancient and powerful senses we have. So I light incense, and that incense speaks to my being, my body. And I have to light the candle every day to begin, which means that every day I must practice. And then I put the candle out, and then I have to light it again. It's not like it's once and done. And then you see me do the bells. And on the one, my left hand, I have the dorje, which is like a lightning bolt, and the other is the bell, the buta. And I ring them nine times while I say the mantra of Nembutsu. I do that nine times because we're a cosmic religion, and we recognize the nine planets in our solar system. Sorry, we still include Pluto. But what we want to do is we want to physically create a sensorial experience so that the lizard brain, that part of us, can begin to feel calm. The next practice that we can do is meditation. Meditation will help to calm that part of the brain. It'll help everything to settle down. Then the mammalian part of the brain. Well, part of the mammalian part of the aspect of the brain is satisfied by the fact that we're doing this together. So even when I'm practicing by myself, I know that billions of people throughout the world are probably practicing something very similar to this. You know, we always number religious groups, and it's kind of, if you look into it, it's a little odd how they count these numbers. But I always remind people that they never count the Chinese, because in China, the Chinese government has outlawed religion. And yet, we know that there are, of the billions of people that live in that part of the world, and there are billions that are practicing. I know some of them personally that have escaped that government. So you're not alone. And even if you don't think of it in that sense, when we make the circles that you see we do with incense, that represents what we used to call the three worlds, the past, the future, and the present as one. And so when I sit and I do this liturgy, which is based on ancient liturgies that have been done for millennia, I am one with all of those. I am one with all of those times and places. And I am one with anyone who has ever intentionally sought that interconnectedness. So another practice that we can do for the mammalian brain is chanting. One of the reasons I love chanting, especially when you chant with other people, is that there's just this sort of thing where you just sort of let go of your ego self, you know? You let go of that awareness and you're just part of that movement. And when I chant today, I hope you join me and we are one. And that gives us a sense of connection and warmth and the sense of belonging, which satisfies the needs of the mammalian brain. And then the cortex, the neocortex. That is where, hopefully, what I'm doing now is satisfied. So like in a service like this, or a daily devotional practice, that would be the place where I might read something, or I might listen to a talk, or I might use the four questions of mindfulness that we use in the four direction system of mindfulness. That is the main source of practice for the Dragonfly Sangha. That I might unpack something that has hooked me and use that time to clear my mind. So that is the way within which I meet the needs of the neocortex. And by having a practice that touches on all of those things, the reptilian brain, the mammalian brain, and the neocortex, all of them become one. And there's all kinds of changes that go on in the body and brain that are so good for us. Last time, a couple of weeks back, we talked about the immune system. This is one of the most powerful things you can do to increase your immunity. And not just your immunity to physical things, but your immunity to psychological viruses. Because as deadly as a physical virus can be, the viruses of the mind are far more insidious and far more deadly to the spirit. So, in summary, we want to have a practice, and again, you know, I would suggest that you get the Book of Common Meditation and get the newest version, the hardcover version, because that has all the updates. And you do your own liturgy of the day. And you certainly, I hope you're enjoying doing it with me this way on Monday evenings. But do it each day. Each day, I start my day with that practice. And the more time I give to it, the better my day is. And some people say to me, well, when's the best time to practice? Whenever you can. But the thing that's so useful about a situation like this, where most of us are home now more than we usually were, and even if we work from home, we often find that we have more time than we did before. That we find a time that is special, that we can put aside, and we treat it as important as any other thing that we find important that day. And in fact, I would say it should be the most important thing that we do every day. And if we can do a longer practice of a half hour, then maybe we do a shorter practice a couple of times a day. But the important thing is that we do it. It's not so much how long we do it. It's not so much, you know, people think that, oh, well, I've got to sit for a certain amount of time. That's not true. It's more important how often you do it. And that is what we call discipline. Now, that's a word that people don't like to use much today. I like it. Discipline means, at root, etymologically, self-control. And only a free person, and by that I mean existentially, can do discipline. Habit is like a form of slavery that takes over. Discipline, that is the act of a free person. So see your practice that way. You're putting your flag in the ground and saying, I am a free being, a liberated being, and this practice is the realization of that enlightenment. So, I highly encourage